The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by OneClick Upsell, the most popular, largest upsell app in the Shopify marketplace, trusted by over 11,000 users, over 1,900 of those big spending Shopify Plus stores, and they've generated over $200 million in revenue for the merchants that use them. And you may be thinking, oh, hey, Andrew, I've heard of OneClick Upsell. I know these guys, but do you really? Do you know what they've rolled out recently? They've got some cool new stuff. For their pre-purchase and their post-purchase upsells, you can now select from multiple different offers to present your customers. So instead of having them just have to pick from one single thing, you can give them the option to pick from multiple upsells, which helps and has proven to increase the number of people who actually take you up on those upsells. So if you're not using upsells in your store, it's an amazingly easy, fast way to increase your average order value and your revenues. So check them out at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by Fulfill.io, the ERP built natively for e-commerce sellers. ERPs are terrifying to set up. They're expensive, they're painful, and for good reason. A lot of the leading companies make you work with expensive outside consulting firms, pay to add new channels, new carriers, new warehouses. Thankfully, none of that is an issue with Fulfill. With Fulfill, all of their onboarding is done in-house with their team that knows the product inside and out. You don't have to pay to add new channels, carriers, or warehouses. There's no expensive middleware software you have to buy because they have built it all in-house. Native connections to Shopify, Amazon, Walmart, eBay, Etsy, WooCommerce, Magento, and more. And they are the highest rated ERP in the ECF community among our members. And that is when they're getting stacked up against the likes of Odoo, Scubana, Brightpearl, and yes, even NetSuite. So if you want to learn more about streamlining your e-commerce business without all the pain and gnashing of teeth, check them out at ecommercefuel.com/fulfill. Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping the 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, rejoined for the 23rd, 52nd, how many times do you think you've been on, Bill?
Too many at this point. Everybody thinks I'm the co-host, and I say, I'm not the co-host. It's Andrew's podcast. I just plug it in when there's not more interesting people available.
Pretty much co-host, and I've had to start paying you because you were like, dude, okay, man, like 5-6 times, I can do that for a favor for a friend. 50 times plus, you got to start putting me on retainer here. So appreciate you coming back.
Thank you for sending me a case of Diet Coke every month. It's a great retainer. It's totally worth it.
That's the the cheapest professional co-host package for the quality in the history of podcasting. but dude, good to have you back on. And we're going to be talking, for those that don't know you, which is, I'm guessing, very few people if they've been listening to this podcast for a while, Bill D'Alessandro. He is the owner of Natural Dog Company. Yeah, just very experienced, savvy entrepreneur and good friend and just general all-around fun person to hop on the horn with and talk shop. And today we're going to be diving into talking about financing. How do you finance your business? I think we did an episode on this maybe, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, but it's been a while. I think it's due for a refresher. You have some strong thoughts on this. You have a lot of expertise in the area. And I figure maybe let's kick it off, Bill, with like, I know you have... Let's start talking about revenue-based. What's the term for them? Is it revenue-based loans? What do you call them?
So I call them fixed-fee loans. Some people will call them revenue-based loans, but the actual term is merchant cash advances.
Merchant, so okay.
What I'm talking about here is if you're an entrepreneur, or you're an e-commerce entrepreneur especially, and you're listening to this podcast, you have invariably been approached by people like 8Fig or Clearco or Wayflyer, or there's a million of them, right? Who will say, give you a pitch like this. Do you need working capital for your business? Just connect your Shopify account, you know, click twice, and we will loan you $100,000 for a fixed fee of just $9,000. And you'll pay back 12% of sales until the money is paid back. Like, how easy is this? It's way better than a credit card. You know, it's founder friendly. Just borrow the money and grow your business today. That's the basic pitch.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, merchant cash advance, it kind of, maybe this is a foreboding sign of where this conversation is heading, but it reminds me of the cash advance stores on the corner with the yellow signs on payday. You see people out the door and you know they're just not a healthy place to go get financing for your personal life, right?
Right.
Very, you know. So, but these are, so you've kind of maybe stepping back just a little bit here, like financing is a huge, I think one thing that most people don't realize until they get there, even if you intellectually hear people talk about it, until you have been there or seen people that are close to you go through it, like e-commerce is a a horrifically hard business to navigate on the financing side. Like, did that surprise you, Bill, when you started growing really quickly, how difficult of a challenge it was to finance your inventory?
Yeah. I mean, I would say this is one of the core problems in e-commerce. You know, for the past 5 to 10 years, right, everything has been great and money has been free, interest rates have been low. And so everybody's been focused on, you know, what they thought was the only main lever, advertising, right? Like, how do we spend more money to scale our business through advertising? And you guys have all been part of the e-commerce echo chamber for the past decade, so I won't rehash how that's gone. But that's where all the content has been. And now all of a sudden, people have realized that interest rates are way up and financing your business smartly is also absolutely critical and one of the biggest challenges. Because if you have a rapidly growing e-commerce business, you're selling physical stuff, you're an inventory-based business. So when you think about it, a business that does 100 million in sales has to have way more inventory on hand than a business that does 100,000 in sales. So as your business grows, it actually consumes cash because inventory is a use of cash. As your inventory balance goes up, your money is not in your bank account, it is on your shelves at your 3PL or in your warehouse. So growing e-commerce businesses suck cash. And I have seen so many friends and clients who are growing and their income statement looks great, but they have a negative cash balance in their bank account because it's all going in inventory and they don't know where they're going to turn to buy their next inventory, even though they have tons of revenue coming in because they're not throwing off enough cash flow to finance the inventory buys. So they have to go borrow money. And that's partially what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah. And if you're not careful, you can get to a place where you just run out of cash. You run out of cash. It's kind of game over or can be game over for your business. And this was an issue even when interest rates were at historical lows, you know, 2-3 years ago, even, you know, 18 months ago, right? So, and the, you know, with rates going up, I don't know, what if they've gone up 300 bips, 300 basis points, 3.5% in the last, you know, 12 months-ish?
Depends when you start counting, but a treasury bill's at 5% now.
Yeah, which is crazy. It's become even more of an issue. So let's talk about the revenue base slash, you know, merchant cash advances, however we want to call them. Why do you strongly dislike these? Hate is maybe a better term for it. Why do you hate them so much? Because I'm going to play a little devil's advocate here in a minute, but what's the bear case for them? Because you have some strong feelings here.
I have some strong feelings here. My strong feelings are primarily around these things are the way they are marketed and sold, and not necessarily around the fact that they exist. Because there are times when you need capital and this is the only capital available to you. The problem is these things are predatorily priced loans and they are marketed as cheap loans. And that is the problem. So I've said before and I'll reiterate again, the entire business model of people like 8Fig and Wayflyer is based on the fact that entrepreneurs don't know how to do interest rate math. And their whole business is to exploit the fact that they are better at math than you are. So that is what I'm hoping we can attack on the podcast today.
Got it. We'll dive into that for us a little bit, right? Like, it's especially the interest rate thing. Like, why? What do you mean entrepreneurs can't do math?
So, and I don't mean this as a slight on entrepreneurs because interest rate math is really hard unless you have a finance degree. It can be really tough to understand. You know, it can be non-intuitive. So the best way to do this, I think, is with an example. So let's go back to that $100,000 8Fig or Wayflyer loan at a 9% fee, right? And let's say it's a 9% fee and you're going to pay, so it's $109,000, right? $100,000 of principal, $9,000 of fee. Notice I'm not saying interest, I'm saying fee. So it's $109,000 that you have to pay back. So what happens then is that they say, okay, it's roughly a 6-month loan. Some of these are paid back as a percent of revenue, but let's, for the purpose of this example, make it easy. We'll say it's a 6-month loan. So you're going to pay back $109,000 over 6 every month. So you're going to pay back $18,166 a month, right? So what is the interest rate? Notice I didn't say the fee. The fee is 9%. What is the actual interest rate on this loan? You might think, first question, oh, it's 9%. No, it's not 9%. 9% is the fee. Okay, well, maybe it's a 6-month loan, so I double it. So the interest rate is 18%. Well, that's not so bad, 18%. You know, that's about the same as a credit card, not so bad. Wrong. It is way higher than 18%. And I want to kind of walk you through why that is. And the reason for that is because you pay the full 9% fee on all of the money, even the money you pay back after the first month. So a way to think about it is that 6-month loan with a 9% fixed fee, so it's $109,000 payback, is actually 6 mini loans One for 1 month at a 9% fee, one for 2 months at a 9% fee, one for 3 months, one for 4 months, one for 5 months, and one for 6 months, each of those loans at a 9% fee. So to understand the true cost of capital here, you have to average the cost of capital of each of those mini loans. The reason they're mini loans is you only had the first month of money for 1 month. You pay back $100,000 over six of principal plus $9,000, 9% over six of interest. So you've paid back 9% fee, but you only have the money for a month. So you have to multiply that by 12. So the effective interest rate on that first mini loan is 108%. So when you average it out, you've got 108% interest rate, effective interest rate on the first loan, and it goes down from there. It's a little better in February, it's a little better in March, it's a little better in April. Finally, the last payment that you had for the full 6 months is quote unquote just an 18%, 9 times 2 interest rate. So when you average it all out, it actually turns out that what looks like a 9% fixed fee loan with monthly repayments over 6 months is actually a true effective interest rate of 44.1% APR on that loan.
Got it. Okay. So let me put on, totally makes sense between all those things you said, like you're not, the interest rate is significantly higher than what you probably are estimating going into this if you don't do the math. I'm going to put on the hat of the other side of this, because in businesses either we've owned or invested in multiple times, you and I have both, you know, either used or approved the use of these, you know, these types of products before. So I would say, yes, Bill, like just playing devil's advocate, yes, Bill, you are paying a 44%, but a few things. One, these are incredibly fast, right? Like if you're going to go get lending in any other source, whether it's a line of credit or whether you're trying to do inventory finance or, you know, asset-based lending or PO factoring, any of this kind of stuff, it's going to suck up a bunch of your time. So A, they're incredibly fast. You can get them, you know, sometimes in just an hour or two. Two, APR doesn't always matter, right? Like if you're doing, sometimes the convenience, especially the lower the amount, right? Let's say you need an extra 50, 75K, and that's not a huge amount, but it just helps make things easier. If you look at things, maybe it's, you don't care about the APR, but maybe, you know, paying $3,000-$4,000 for that can free up, you know, can really make your business run smoother, or it allows you to be able to save a lot more money somewhere else. For example, I was talking to someone yesterday who they were looking at a situation, they're a seasonal business, and they could either do air freight or sea freight. But because they were seasonal, if they did sea freight, they didn't have the money up front to be able, because it was in their slow season, to be able to pay for the way more economical sea freight, because they just didn't have the cash to place those POs for the busy fall season, right? So what they were doing was they were waiting until the fall, losing a third of their entire profit on their products, and then paying for, you know, and because then they had the cash to do it. Whereas if they had a loan like this, and they have used in the past, it was probably a better option. They're not personally guaranteed too, right? Like these loans, if it goes south, they're not going to come after your house, after your car, you know, after your firstborn child. Pretty sure you can do that under debt laws. Like no PGs. And as we'll talk about here in a minute, sometimes there aren't better alternatives. So anyway, it was a long rant as well, but thoughts on any of those?
So sure. So I want to be clear, like, there are some reasons when borrowing at 44%, there are some situations where borrowing at 44% makes sense. Like maybe the one you outlined was super interesting about the timing on the sea freight and not having the free cash flow. That might be one of those situations where it makes sense to borrow at 44% because you might come out ahead, right? The problem though is the solution set of situations where it is worth it to borrow at 44% is very different than the set of situations mm-hmm. where it makes sense to borrow at 9%. And these are four, and my problem is that these are actually 44% loans being marketed and sold to entrepreneurs who think they are 9% loans. So they are using them in situations where a 9% loan would be appropriate, but a 44% loan would definitely not be appropriate. And that is one of the problems. And it partially, as you said, Andrew, it is often very easy to get these loans. That dynamic in itself, it might seem like it's a bug to make it hard to get a loan. It's actually a feature, because if it is easy to get a loan, I have worked with so many entrepreneurs who are buried under stacks of 2, 3, 4 of these things that are doing concurrent paybacks because it was too easy to just click the button and they got a wire for $100,000 and they didn't realize, you know, what it was going to do to their cash flow.
Well, I think one of the other things too, that I don't think we've stressed enough, is it's not even just it's a 44% loan. It's on that amount. It's that you have to pay back 10, 15, 20% of your daily cash flow, oftentimes the ways these are structured to the loans. And so if you were able to stretch that out, maybe that might help with your cash flow. But in the short term, it really sucks your cash flow dry because they want to get paid back, understandably. But that's a huge, it can really cause problems if you're not aware for that, if you're not ready for it, and make things much more difficult.
It's brutal. I mean, very often the repayment rates in these things can be 15% of sales. What is the net margin on a lot of e-commerce businesses? Like 15% of sales can be your entire profit, right? Like you can pretty much nuke almost all of your cash flow on these things, you know, very, very, very quickly. And I think people are not understanding, not running a cash flow model to understand over the life of this loan, you know, am I getting a little bit overcommitted here?
Yeah, we've got, if you're an e-commerce field member, we'll link up to this. We have a cash flow, there's a customized cash flow model I built and shared in the forum. So you can go in, you can type in your, you know, all the different variables, credit card debt, your loans, your merchant cash advances, margins, everything, PO orders, and be able to do some cash flow planning here. Because it's very non-intuitive how to do. Are there even any good tools, Bill? How do you do this? Do you just use a spreadsheet? Like, is there, with how many tools and SaaS apps we have, I'm surprised there's not like something that, a Mercury bank for cash flow forecasting, right? Like, does anything like that exist?
It's really tough. There's a piece of software called Cogsy, C-O-G-S-Y. They're working on this. You can do it in just a spreadsheet, though. You don't need another SaaS tool to do this. You know, you need to understand, first of all, I'm going to assume you have a good income statement, which if you don't, fix that. If you have a good income statement, a very easy way to get a proxy for your monthly cash flow is at the below the net income line on your income statement. First thing you want to do is add back your cost of goods sold, because cost of goods sold is a non-cash expense. You eventually have to buy inventory, but you didn't have cash out the door when you shipped that one more unit, even though you recognized it under accrual on your income statement. So an easy way to understand, you know, how much cash your business generated yesterday is to look at your yesterday's P&L and add back the cost of goods sold. That's going to be a rough proxy for the change in your bank account, because generally, most income statement items are effectively cash, except for COGS, which is like a major accrual one. So if you want to have a quick and dirty bridge from accrual to cash accounting, add back COGS below net income, and then start doing an inventory projection. So you can start to figure out, hey, in what month, I've got 12 months projected of income statements. I add back the COGS to get my projected cash generation of the business. And then I say, I know I'm going to have to put $100,000 PO in here. It's due 50% up front, and then it's 50% on delivery. I think delivery is on this date. And start building out your uses of cash below your net income. And just quick and dirty like that, you should be able to see. And then this is also where you would take out, oh, geez, I owe 8% of sales to Shopify Capital, right? So I better take that out of cash flow. So to translate the income statement to a cash flow statement light, I think is a really illuminating exercise for people, and they can do it in 30 minutes.
Yeah. If you haven't ever dove into this, like cash flow, income statement, I think is somewhat intuitive. A cash flow statement is not very intuitive. Bill, I remember being like a punky little sophomore on campus going through my first accounting class. I remember sitting in there and I remember the teacher being like, okay, like if your accounts receivable go up and you don't pay them, that generates cash. And my head exploded. I was like, wait a minute, what? You're telling me if
yes.
It did not, it took me, and granted, I tend to take a while. I'm not the fastest person, you know, on the block here and getting new concepts, but it took me like 2 weeks for me to be like, that doesn't make any sense. So anyway, all this cash flow is not intuitive, but if you're running any type of inventory-based business, like you really owe it to yourself to kind of beat this into your brain, because it's a hugely important topic. So,
yep, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So what do you think? I want to talk about some alternatives here in a minute, but what do you think about, like when you see the businesses, because again, you've chatted with a lot of businesses that have had these, you mentioned that have stacked them up 2 or 3, like what is the solution there for them? And what do you see, what's the underlying problem there? Or what, because I think there is one. It's not just, this is, because using these loans a lot of times can be helpful, but if you use them, you know, systematically, it oftentimes points to a symptom as opposed to, you know, of the underlying business. So what are your thoughts on businesses are really struggling in a situation where they may have 2 or 3 of these stacked up?
Yes. So let me put a pin in, if you have 2 or 3 of these stacked up, how do you get out of it? Because I have thoughts on that too. So I'm going to come back to that. But the first question is, what drives a business to have 2 or 3 of these merchant cash advance type loans stacked up? And honestly, what it usually is that these businesses, the margins aren't good enough. Right? In theory, your business should be cash flowing and you need to be putting that cash aside on the balance sheet so you have cash to pay for inventory. But the problem is a lot of these businesses are spending too much money on advertising. So their income statement, their actually cash flow, their unit economics from one sale are not high enough. So they're not generating enough cash, or they start generating enough cash. And so they go like, oh, great. My bank balance is going up, and they start paying themselves too much. And then 6 months later, they got to put in a huge PO and they don't have the cash and they go take a revenue-based loan. And now you're down on the slope because now that revenue-based loan is taking X percent of your daily cash flow, which leaves less flow through cash available on an already thin margin business. And then you need another one next time you need to buy inventory.
Yeah.
I think it is often a symptom of not big enough margins.
Yeah. And then because of just a vicious cycle that it's hard to get out of if you can't. I was chatting with a company that was kind of dealing with some financing issues this week. And granted, theirs is a little trick of a situation, but my number one piece of advice to them as I was trying to think through it was raise your prices. Like I feel like it's kind of maybe we should change this podcast to the Raise Your Prices podcast. Cause I feel like I say that every second or third episode, but it really, if they were able to raise their prices, even by 10 or 15%, it would solve 2/3 to 3/4 of their financing problems in terms of the gap of the financing that they needed.
Yes. Raise prices is a great lever because every dollar you raise your prices drops straight to the bottom line.
Hey, it's Andrew here with a quick aside. And you obviously love e-commerce. You're interested in that. And so I wanted to make sure you're aware of the private community we have at E-Commerce Fuel for 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brand owners. And it's something we've been building for close to a decade now with over 1,100 members across the globe. And our secret sauce, like the name implies, is that everyone inside has deep experience doing this with an owner mindset. And so what does that mean? It means you get, when you log into our form, you get fast on-point answers to your most pressing questions, regardless of whether that's you're negotiating a new lease for a warehouse, or maybe you're negotiating with UPS or USPS or FedEx about shipping rates or pickup times, or potentially you're just looking to find a great outsourcer, or wondering if you can even outsource your content. Is that something anyone has had success with? You can tap into this huge knowledge and brain trust across the globe and get answers within hours, sometimes even minutes. So it's an incredibly active form with experienced people. You get to plug into an amazing network worldwide. A lot of our members, when they travel, if they touch down in Dallas or Sydney or London or Bozeman, Montana, or whatever it is, oftentimes they'll reach out to other ECF members. You know, obviously a little harder to do potentially right now, but and see if, you know, they want to get together for a beer to connect and oftentimes get to know a new friend. So it's an amazing network, as well as invites to our member only events like ECF Live, which is our annual summit gathering for about 200 people. And then finally, the intelligence in our community just that's shared helps you avoid making really costly hiring and software mistakes. So our members write reviews on what they're using, their software tools, their agencies, completely unbiased, completely from their own experience. And so you can avoid making that, you know, hiring that agency that's an absolute nightmare, but you don't know about it. Or you can hone in on the one that actually does a really good job. It saves you a ton of time and money from bad hiring and software decisions. So if any of this sounds interesting, head on over to ecommercefuel.com and you can learn more about the community, what's included, and apply for membership as well. All right, let's go ahead and jump back in to the discussion. So what are the alternatives that you, when you look at lending that is going to be better than 44%, right? Like when you think about a finance stack for an e-commerce company, Bill, what are your top three places that people should maybe, or your top choices people should look at before they go to these merchant cash advantages?
So if I kind of look at the stack of capital, like your different choices, right? At the most expensive end, you have credit cards and merchant cash advances, right? You have your Capital One Sparks, you have your Chases, you have your Amexes, all that stuff. If you carry a balance on those things, they're going to cost you 30% of capital. There's an important thing to note, though, about those credit cards. People think these are small business credit cards, so they're not personally guaranteed. I am here to tell you, I have read the agreements of all of the popular small business credit cards. They are all personally guaranteed, which means Chase Bank or Capital One will absolutely come for your personal assets if you do not pay off that credit card. That's a thing I've found a whole bunch of people are not aware of. And then the nice thing about merchant cash loans, if there is a nice thing, they're expensive, but they're not personally guaranteed, right? So Wayflyer is not coming for your house if you default on that loan.
Bill, I'm gonna take this whole clip, this whole podcast. I'm gonna condense it down to that little sound clip. Wayflyer is not coming for your house. Turn it into an ad, spread it all over Twitter, and make you sound like the biggest Merchant Cash Advance fanboy in the whole world. I think that would be a good use of this.
I think Wayflyer would probably come after me and be like, "Don't tell people that." People are just defaulting on Wayflyer loans left, right, and center.
I don't know. Maybe after they listen to this podcast, that might be the lesser two evils in terms of what they'd like out there.
And actually, let's go there for a second. So let's say that you are stacked up on 8Fig and Wayflyer and Clearco and all this stuff, right? What do you do? I mean, I have met entrepreneurs who are just drowning. And here's the problem with them. You can't refinance them because you've already paid the fee. So perversely, with normal quote unquote debt, the longer it takes to pay you, the more to pay it off, the more you pay in interest, right? With a merchant cash advance, you've already committed to the full fee up front. So paying it off faster doesn't help you. It just makes your situation worse, right? Conversely, if you can stretch out paying it, it makes the effective rate lower because you don't actually pay more fee. The fee is already locked. So if what you had a 6-month loan with a 9% fee, if that becomes a 12-month loan, your effective rate actually got better. If that makes sense. And because these loans are not personally guaranteed, they are absolutely willing to negotiate. So you can call them and you can go, "I can't pay," at which entrepreneurs are aghast, right? I could just call them and say, "I can't pay. Won't they take my business?" Absolutely not. They don't know how to run your business. They have no interest in running their business. What they will say to you is, "Okay, thanks for telling us now before you just stop paying. What if we gave you a payment holiday for 3 months? What if we, you know, settled for 75% of the balance right now? What if we settled for 50% of the balance right now?" There are so many choices you have because they don't have a personal guarantee. There are so many ways to strategically default on these guys. And this is something I've helped a ton of entrepreneurs with too, is how to approach these lenders and settle for half off, you know, or 75% off or no payments for a year or whatever to try to get some breathing room. You got all kinds of choices.
But one of the issues there though is, if you're saying you can't pay, they're locked in. And again, I'm not as familiar as I should be with the mechanics of how they do this, but those repayments are coming off of your revenue stream. So unless your revenue goes to zero, which in effect is going to kill your business, you know, it doesn't kill it, but unless you cut off your revenue, they're plugged into Shopify, they're plugged into Amazon, PayPal, whatever it is. They've got, you know, unless your revenue goes down, you're going to be paying them whether you want to or not. So how does that work?
They will stop taking their VIG because they don't want to put you out of business. Because if they put you out of business, they take zero, okay. Right? So you don't just like stop paying them. You call them and you're like, "Stop taking my money or I'm going to go bankrupt," right? And you won't get the rest of it. So it can be very, very collaborative. Now, you know, there are some of these guys that's easier to do with than others. PayPal is notoriously difficult on this because they just take the money right out of your PayPal account and they are notoriously difficult to renegotiate with. The Wayflyers, the 8figs, the Clearcos, all that stuff, very often they're drafting from your bank account. They don't always stand between you and your cash, like where the Shopify payment goes straight into Clearco's account and then Clearco disperses to you. Very often Clearco is withdrawing straight from your bank account, in which case you can absolutely, you know, drain the bank account and start bouncing their ACH debits. The Amazon loans, we haven't touched on the Amazon loans. The Amazon loans are a real double-edged sword because Amazon, there's no way to dodge them. They have your inventory, they have all the customers, they take the repayment, right? Like they freaking own you and they do not renegotiate. That being said, the cost of capital on the Amazon loans, because they have that security, is some of the best out there. It's some of the cheapest money of this type out there is an Amazon loan because they have so much security.
Yeah. How much lower is it than the other options?
Half. Significantly cheaper.
Half. Okay. So yes. Big takeaway from this. If you're looking to get any kind of merchant cash advance loan, chances are if you do it through Amazon, if that's an option for you, that is going to be significantly cheaper than probably most of your other options out there.
Yes. You got to be super careful though, because Amazon has two flavors. They have these ones from, they're partnered with Marcus, who Marcus is owned by Goldman Sachs. And those are like that's the money you want, the Marcus money. It's like real, true interest rate money. They also offer these things called paraffin loans, which is this other partner. And the paraffin ones are dirty, just like we've been talking about. They're 45%, they're fixed fee, they're merchant cash advance style. So I'm not here to endorse the paraffin loans through Amazon, but the Marcus loans through Amazon, if you qualify them, are cheap money.
Got it. Okay. So most of this podcast, as we were kind of intended and planned, was just diving into the dangers of merchant cash advances. If nothing else, maybe they have a time and place depending on situations, but go in eyes wide open, understanding how much you're going to pay for these things. What are the other best options that you have? Like when I think about it, and Bill, your knowledge and experience on the debt side is much, much more expansive than mine. But I think like line of credit at a bank, at a local bank, if you can get that, is going to be a much, much, much better option. You could potentially even do PO factoring. You could do asset-based lending. Those are going to be more time intensive, but definitely probably lower on the interest rates. Apart from those three, what are other good options that stores have for financing?
So it depends a lot on how big you are. If you are, there's sort of a bifurcation here at about $2 million a year of EBITDA. If you are above $2 million a year of EBITDA, maybe $3 million a year of EBITDA, if you're above that range, you will have a ton of options. There are a ton of private debt funds who would love to loan you 2 to 3 times EBITDA at a LIBOR plus a couple points, very reasonable rates, which would put you in high single digits today as we talk.
So this isn't mezzanine debt. This is actually like legit, maybe 7, 8, 9% fixed rate loans from some reputable places.
It would be a little bit higher than 7 or 8. I mean, what is mezzanine debt? I mean, that can be, I think that's a nebulous term. So what mezzanine debt traditionally means is subordinated debt that is second lien to senior bank debt. And as such, mezzanine debt under the traditional term is usually more expensive, mid-teens in interest rate, and they often also take warrants, which is like equity in your business. Mezzanine debt, the term lately has come to just mean like kind of expensive debt, right? And there are many lenders, mezzanine lenders, are more comfortable with risk generally, who will also come in and lend when there is not a first position bank lender and still charge their same rate of return. But it's a mix. The bigger you get, the more likely you can have kind of true bank debt in the high single digits. And the smaller you are, provided you are above 2 to 3 million, there are a number of mezzanine funds who will lend you at kind of 15% in today's market, but without a PG.
Yeah. So I guess the vast majority of people listening to this are not going to have $2 to $3 million in EBITDA off their business, I would guess. So below that threshold, apart from merchant cash advances, which is not ideal, line of credit, asset-based lending, PO factoring, any other kind of ones that you think people should be considering that they're not thinking about?
The SBA program is, you can't ignore it. So The SBA has a number of these 7A express loans or SBA-backed lines of credit. You can use SBA debt not just to buy a business. You can use it to finance the growth of an existing business. And this debt is going to be some of the cheapest debt out there. I mean, again, LIBOR plus a couple points. And that's because the federal government is going to be personally guaranteed. They are guaranteeing it behind your personal guarantee. So you will personally guarantee. And then if the bank takes your house and your car and all that stuff, and then they're still not whole, Uncle Sam makes the bank whole. And because of that backstop, the terms can be much better. So and the best place to get one of these very often is one of the smaller regional banks in your area. You go to a Wells Fargo, Bank of America, Truist, some of these guys, they're just machines. They don't want to do the small loans. They make it really onerous on the paperwork side. There's quite a few small regional banks out there. People DM me, I can make some introductions, but who will lend to Amazon business, will lend to e-commerce businesses. They're in the business of originating SBA loans. And they get paid an origination fee by they securitize and sell the loan. And so that's really how they make money. So these regional banks and SBA backline, or even if you have enough assets in your business, you may not need to have the SBA back your line. A lot of small banks will lend based on the business's assets, and they generally will look at, now if you have real estate or equipment, that's amazing. Banks love those. But I'm assuming if you're an e-commerce business, you probably don't. Usually the two big assets that any e-commerce business has is inventory and accounts receivable. And most banks will lend an asset-secured line, so usually not personally guaranteed, but secured by the assets. It's going to be some negotiation to get there, but you can find banks that will get there. They will lend you based on 50% of the inventory value at cost plus 80% of the accounts receivable. So if you're sitting on $1 million of inventory and that they will loan you $500,000 against that. And then if you're sitting on another $500,000 of accounts receivable, they'll loan you $400,000 against that. So you could get a $900,000 line of credit in aggregate just based on $1 million of inventory and $500,000 of AR. Important sort of loophole or optimization opportunity for e-com businesses is that if you have an Amazon account and Amazon pays you every 2 weeks, that is technically accounts receivable for 2 weeks of sales. So if you want to make sure you give the bank a balance sheet, like right before Amazon pays you out, it will show a significant amount of accounts receivable.
Bill, man, you should really think about doing some consulting on this. You just spin up a consulting business, help people out with this stuff. I mean, this is your jam. It's cool to see.
I love this stuff, man. It's fun. Like I enjoy helping entrepreneurs, you know, figure this stuff out. This is sort of my background. I work in investment banking and private equity. You know, I kind of get it, and I appreciate you kind of giving me the poke here. But so one thing I'm trying to do, I set a goal for myself. You know, I'm trying to take on a few clients. So
wait, what? What? Really?
Yes. Thank you for giving me the poke.
Totally.
Andrew is first in line. But if you're listening to this, I'm only going to take a couple because I'm still running Elements Brands and Natural Dog Company full time. I'm looking to help a couple people out, kind of take you on, help you guys figure out problems like this. But it generally works, you know, that we meet once a week. You know, we can call, text, and email kind of in between, and I'll help you guys optimize the financial stack of your business. Like that's what's fun.
Yeah. And I mean, I am, as all longtime listeners will know, not a big debt guy, but when I do ever have questions about debt, anything in this realm, Bill is my number one call. The man knows the stuff, if you couldn't tell already from listening. So, and you're gonna be doing, like, for your clients too, like obviously we focus on debt today, and I think that'll be a huge component of what you're gonna be offering on the consulting side. And I think you've got billda.com/debt if you wanna go learn more about specifically, even beyond what we talked about today, what Bill can help you out with in terms of really analyzing and thinking through the financial stack of your company to optimize for efficiency and just everything. But you're also going to be offering kind of more of a holistic sense of consulting services for your clients that come on board in terms of what are the other things you can help with?
Well, so I want to see, I think I can be helpful to people in this way. So at Elements Brands, we've raised external capital. I have a board of directors. My board of directors has been phenomenally helpful to me. I mean, they are older guys who've been there, done that, and have provided me phenomenal perspective. And a lot of my success is due to my ability to bounce stuff off of them. I've had a ton of entrepreneurs come to me and go, geez, that's so cool, but like, how do I start a board of directors? Like, how do I get people to care about my business? How do I get a mentor? You know, how do I get people to help me run my business professionally? And it can be hard, right? Because like, busy people are busy, and they're not going to come, you know, just sit on your board, you know, for no compensation. And you also might not want to raise equity, which is another way to get people on your board. So I've had a lot of bootstrapped entrepreneurs tell me like, geez, I would really love that level of accountability, that level of professionalization. You know, I would love to learn how to do financial reporting in my business that a professional board of directors would expect. You know, I'd love to be held accountable to those types of professional ways of operating. So another thing, and I'm working with one guy right now doing this, and I basically say, let me be your board of directors, except with an awesome feature, I can't fire you, right? You know, like, you don't actually work for me. You can fire me if you get tired of hearing me tell you, you know, how we can get bigger and better and faster. But that's the dangerous thing about boards, is they're usually there to fire the CEO. So another thing that I can help with, that I'm helping one person with now, is kind of say, let me professionalize this business. Let me hold you accountable. Let's review the last month's financials. Let's make a strategic plan. Let me be your board of directors here and hold you accountable. So that's another thing that I'm working with people on.
Very cool. Again, billda.com/debt or billda.com/consulting. You can also find him on Twitter at BillDA. Bill, this has been awesome. Thanks, man. One thing we were talking about, I don't think I've ever run you through the lightning round here on the podcast, despite the dozens of times you've been on. So I'm going to make you jump through this. And plus, I'm super curious about some of your answers here. So if you're up for it in our final 10 minutes, cool with ending it that way?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, cool. How would you describe the e-com environment in 1 to 3 words right now?
Difficult and distressed.
Favorite piece of software in your company's tech stack?
I have to go with ShipStation. I just have always thought it's such good software. It's so cheap. They pay me nothing to recommend it. I just have always been blown away at how good ShipStation is.
One of the fondest memories from your childhood?
One of my fondest memories was my dad is an orthopedic surgeon, and for a time he was the doctor for the Carolina Panthers. And so I have some really great memories of being in the Panthers locker room with dad, like helping Kerry Collins stretch. If you guys remember him, he was the quarterback for the Panthers 20 years ago. So you probably don't remember him, but things like that were really great.
Dude, that's like the equivalent of being like a bat boy for like the Yankees or the Braves or something. That's so cool.
It was cool.
So cool. Favorite product that you sell or have ever sold in your career?
Have ever sold our Rock and Green laundry detergent. We don't own the brand anymore. This stuff works so well. I've still got a laundry room full of it. It's powder laundry detergent with enzymes, and it just pulls gunk out of clothes so well. And the bottom line is, it's because our COGS are double most competitors because we do double the enzymes.
What's the hardest part of your business?
People, getting everybody aligned and the strategy clear. You know, as our business has gotten bigger, you know, we've got dozens and dozens of people, having everybody understand what the goals are and how the things that they're doing align to the goals and staying focused on the goals. You know, you'll come back around and people are doing three things that they thought were good ideas, but they don't roll up to the goals. So like that type of EOS style rocks, quarterly rocks, 1 year goals, super tough.
And my favorite and the most uncomfortable, how much money in the bank is enough? So liquid net worth, either cash, securities in the bank. If you make more in the future, fantastic. But if you're like, you know what, this is all I got. I need this to live a happy, fulfilled, good life. What's that number?
Enough to stop working? Like enough for me?
Yes, enough for you and your family.
So enough for me and my family. $20 million.
$20 million. How many hours a week do you work?
I work, we were talking about this before we get on. How many hours a week do I spend at my desk? Probably 40 to 50. How many hours am I working on, you know, full on, like I need to deliver this? Probably 20. The rest is spent on strategy, meeting people, recording podcasts like this, you know, things like that.
Yeah. Okay. But like 40 to 50 hours all in, because that all counts, I think.
So yeah, for sure.
Number one hobby, and you can't say entrepreneurship or work.
Oh my God. I feel so self-conscious when people say this. Like, what are my hobbies? I love to go camping. I have two young kids, so they're pretty much my hobby. But when I have free time, I love to go camping. My wife loves to go hiking. To be outdoors is really fun.
Dude, you realize we've known each other for like 10 years. Have we ever been camping together? I don't think we have.
No, we haven't. We haven't. I would love to.
Dude, we're going to have to get a Montana this summer. We should get you out there with the family. That'd be super fun.
I would love that. I'm not sure you would enjoy camping with my 1 and 2 year olds, but
I've done it, man. It's doable. You got to be committed to it, but it's doable. So, last question: who's one of the most interesting people? Not definitively. This is not saying that they're at the pinnacle, but one of many, I'm sure. Who's one of the more interesting people you've met through ECF over the years?
Through ECF. Oh boy, I have met so many great people through ECF. Garrett Akerson from Kindred Bravely, so interesting. Blair Budlong from Dex Direct. Craig Gentry, who unfortunately is no longer with us, incredibly interesting person who I met through ECF. Man, the list could go on forever. I just wonderful, interesting. I mean, you, Mike Jackness, you know, who have become, you know, come to my wedding type friends. It's been so many great people.
Bill, always never fail to deliver, man. Again, BillDA.com/debt or BillDA.com/consulting if you'd be interested in having, you know, be able to have full access to Bill's brain here in terms of analyzing, optimizing, and helping you kind of implement a really effective a finance stack for your business, in addition to just kind of general coaching, you know, oversight, and helping you get to where you want to be. So Bill, always so fun, man. Thanks for dropping all the knowledge and look forward to having you back in the future. And sorry, the Diet Coke shipments could be a little late this week. I hope that's all right.
I'll survive. I have some extra. Thanks for having me, man. Awesome. This was great.
Always good to have you, man.
Given you've made it to the end of the episode, there's a pretty good chance you're fairly serious about this e-commerce stuff, which is why you should check out the E-Commerce Fuel community. It's a vetted, vibrant community for 7- and 8-figure brand owners. And joining gives you access to a lively discussion forum for experienced founders sharing insights and getting help, access to our library of over 20,000 member reviews on everything from agencies to tech to lawyers to all the things that, you know, founders are making hiring decisions or purchasing decisions on to run their business, and invites to member events throughout the year. So if that sounds interesting, you can apply for membership and learn more at ecommercefuel.com. Big thanks to one-click upsell from Zipify Apps. Rapidly increase your AOV by offering targeted high-converting upsells. You can get started with them at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. And also to Fulfill.io, an ERP designed specifically to streamline complex e-commerce businesses and the highest rated ERP among our community members. Learn more at ecommercefuel.com/fulfill. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard, adventure often, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
This is the ASY Radio Network live from New York.